What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. He was already on this week, but he is so smart at talking about the NBA and the Memphis Grizzlies. We had to bring him back. You can find him at Substack Elitist, a Grizzlies and NBA draft-free Substack. All support goes to St. Jude because he is a grade-A human being. You can also find him on Twitter at @Paka_Flocka. Parker, how are you doing, my friend?
Connor, it's great to be back on the Gabe Kuhn Show again this week, talking with you this time. And, doing great. I do want to give a big shout out before we dive into some hoops talk. But today is the 12-year anniversary of my wife Allie's cancer diagnosis. So just wanted to shoot. We always call it the cancerversary. So glad we have another year. Happy cancerversary to Allie. I think when this is airing, we're actually going to be at dinner, but you know what? I'm just very, very happy today. It's a very sweet day for us over here at the Fleming family.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, Parker, if you could just give a brief summary of Allie's story and the importance to St. Jude, I do think it is something our listeners would love to hear.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, my wife Allie, this time 12 years ago, she was, like every other middle school girl getting ready for dance nationals. And she had these episodes, like these aura type episodes. And so she had gone to doctors and stuff, and they found a tumor in her brain. And while they were operating on her for her first brain surgery, they found that the tumor was cancerous. In the middle of her brain surgery, they admitted her as a St. Jude patient. And then so she had gone through 33 rounds of radiation, and then in 2015, she was re-diagnosed with brain cancer, and she had 33 more rounds of brain and spine radiation. And, you know, we're still, 12 years later, we're still doing good. Every year she has a big milestone, whether it's, graduating high school, graduating college, becoming a homeowner, marrying this doofus right here, or getting her first job. So, every year is a big milestone. So we're just, we're happy for another year, Big 12.
Yeah. And once again, you can find all the information about St. Jude and Substack Elitist over on Parker's Twitter @Paka_Flocka. I highly recommend people going over there. Any money made will go to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital through Allie's Ally. So make sure you go to check that out. And again, if you need Grizzlies information, if you need draft information, which the NBA draft talk is going to get started here pretty soon, post All-Star break, there is no better place to go than Parker. Last year, his NBA draft guide was quite literally one of the best I have ever seen. I can't wait to see what he has this year. But today, Parker, you did release a new piece over at Substack Elitist. I got that email this morning, was very excited to read through it. And the topic of conversation, before we really get into the Grizzlies' first half of their season, back half of their season, expectations, things like that, we'll get to that in a moment. You wrote about the improvements for the NBA All-Star Game, All-Star Weekend, and the end-season tournament. I want to start with the NBA All-Star Game. It has been a huge topic of conversation over the last few years. It seems like the NBA All-Star Game is just getting worse and worse as a product. And listen, I understand that, you know, when you go back and you watch the old All-Star Games from the early 2000s, mid-2000s, they weren't the most competitive things in the world. For about three quarters, they were messing around. You'd see all these huge dunks. You know, there's clips going around today of Shaq running fast breaks, Vince Carter on fast breaks. It wasn't the biggest defense in the world, but there was still a level of competitiveness there. What are your suggestions to get the NBA back to that?
So I will say, like, one thing that's like the difference in, you know, the game, the All-Star game then and the All-Star game now, it's not about the competitiveness, because like you said, it's never been this like competitive, fiery game or anything.
Right.
It was what it is, an All-Star game. But at least it's like every single year we saw like a record for – we see a record for threes taken in the All-Star game. Like at least back in the day, they would give the crowd something with some like big dunks, big fast break dunks and stuff like that. And we don't get that anymore. It's just like, oh, we're going to fire up these threes. Oh, here's the occasional alley-oop or cool play. Like I kind of wish we got like back to that instead of just turning it into like a – pickup game, like a glorified pickup game, which I mean it is essentially, but in my article I said they should just abolish the All-Star game because there's no fire to it. I think there's only so many times you can just tell these guys we got to take it seriously, we got to play hard, to where like it just goes mute at that point. The point gets mute. It's just like whatever, it's gonna be the same every year. No, like I don't think there's anything, there's no gimmick. There's no MC, like, yeah, like, hey, let's play hard. Meanwhile, Kevin Hart is the MC of the game. Like, I don't know. Like, I would rather them just abolish it and make another tournament. Like, whenever the league expands to 32 teams, make a tournament. 32-team, single elimination, even, like, have an ode to, like, bringing back that, like, competitive fire. Like, call it, like, the Kobe Bryant Mamba Cup or Mamba Invitational. And make another in-season tournament out of it. And maybe from there, and then, you know, honor and recognize your all-stars at like semifinals or finals of those games or something. But that's just my take. I just don't think there's anything that can fix it, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's because I think to your point, the only incentive that makes any sense for the NBA would be money. And they already have that with the in-season tournament. And to be honest, it's worked better than I think expected. There, you know, the in-season tournament can get pretty competitive. But it's just the whole idea of the NBA All-Star game ultimately hinges on how competitive are the All-Stars going to be. And it just seems like the last few years, the answer is not very competitive at all. You know, just aesthetically, I do think they need to bring back the players wear their own jerseys. I think that was one of the really fun things from the past that they need to bring back. I don't need an NBA jersey or a new All-Star jersey every single season. Just let the guys wear the other jerseys. That's so much more fun to see. It's just, you know, I think that my idea would be I think abolishing the game could work. It could work. Or just do like a 3-on-3 tournament. That would switch it up. I do think that there would be a competitive aspect to that because you would get one more one-on-one moments. Like if you were able to have team captains and they selected, you know, two guys that are going to be on their team and then you do a 3-on-3 tournament, I think that could be a lot of fun. Or do you just go into doing more like three-point contests, you know, Skills Cup, NBA dunk contest, put more of a focus on that. Maybe move the dunk contest to one night, make it expand it, make it a little bit bigger, try to bring back, you know, the pageantry of it that I also feel like we've lost over the last few years. It's just the actual NBA All-Star game has just been so disappointing in the last few years. And the biggest difference is, in the past, yes, like the first three quarters, they would kind of just mess around and throw fast breaks to Shaq and things like that. But that fourth quarter, you would see people locked down. But it was because Kobe Bryant and players like that were leading the way. They were setting the tone of the All-Star game. And as much as I love LeBron, as much as I love Steph and Kevin Durant, they are just not going to do that.
No, they never have. And then you also, too, like, I think that's like Wimby say something about like bringing it back. Like maybe, like you said, you need your faces of the league to be tone setters. And like, let's be real too. Like, I don't think this new generation's really helped. Like, I don't think like Luka or Jokic, like aside from a couple of dunks, like Ja never didn't really bring much either. Like, I don't know. Like, I think at this point, you know, the All-Star game, it is what it is. People don't – also, too, I think players just also don't want to get hurt.
Right.
They don't want to get hurt.
That's a big part of it.
In this situation. But, yeah, I'm just kind of – I don't know. I just feel like the NBA is at this point where they're just trying new stuff, especially with this new TV deal and the talks about the ratings. And which, granted, they may just be too online, but, like, they're trying to take advantage of the need for area of improvement to try to find – lightning in a bottle. But also, I think there's a lot of dialogue about the All-Star game when it's ultimately just one weekend out of a like 8 or 9 month calendar. Like, I would rather divert the attention away from how can we make the All-Star weekend better and make it more of like, how can we make these playoff games and the NBA finals feel bigger? Like, you know how like when we were kids and we would watch these games and you would have the huge Larry O'Brien trophy on the court, and you would have like legit branding around the NBA finals instead of being like, oh, here's YouTube TV or here is Emirates. So like, I understand sponsorships, but like bringing back more of the big game feel to these big games should be more of an objective than how can we fix the All-Star weekend. You know, I would much rather focus on that, which is ultimately the cultivation of my article I wrote today, is how can we make more games matter in the regular season. And I think abolishing the All-Star game and adding another cup and working around that and the in-season tournament, that could be that lightning in the bottle kind of thing. And granted, I don't want to toot my own horn or anything. The idea could be a really bad idea, but like, if you're looking for like a lightning in the bottle kind of thing that really re-sparks the overall casual interest in the NBA, why not?
Yeah, because I just think what's happening now is it's becoming too bloated, whether it's with sponsorships, whether it's with MCs, whether it's with the actual idea of the NBA All-Star game. Because, for instance, this year they're doing 24 NBA All-Star selections divided into 3 8-player teams. 4-team is the Rising Stars champion. You have, you know, Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal, and Kenny Smith, and Candace Parker. They are the managers of the teams. 2 teams will meet in 1 semifinal game, and the remaining 2 teams meet in another semifinal game. Then the winning teams from Game 1 and Game 2 advance to face either the champion, or in Game 3. It's so confusing. I don't think that a casual fan can follow that. So instead of trying to make it bigger, they just need to strip it down and try something different. Now, when it comes to your in-season tournament idea, I do think this could work because we've seen it work in other sports. Basically, your idea for this isn't some abnormal idea within the sports world. The Premier League and the NHL do it, and what it is a point system within the standings.
Yeah, for sure. And like with that, like I think I had the layout of maybe have it to where like, you know, your basic win, like if the Grizzlies played the Washington Wizards or even like a bigger team, like a New York Knicks, an Eastern Conference team, it's just a 1 point win. Like if you win, it's 1 point. 2 points for a conference win. So the Grizzlies play the Sacramento Kings. It's 2 points. Division is 4. So like, could you imagine like how much buzz and entry there would be about like a Houston Rockets game or San Antonio Spurs game where it's like, yo, this win is 4 points. You imagine how much that could swing in the standings. But then you trickle it down to the in-season tournament where it's like, okay, you get four points for a cup win. And then, you know, they have the advancement stage. So you have, let's say, I want to say it was like five or six points for a knockout win.
Yeah.
8 for the semifinals and 10 for if you win the NBA Cup. Like, could you imagine, let's say, like, you're a team like the Mavericks, where you just get dismantled with injuries in the middle of the season, but you have that NBA Cup win that counts for 10. That could help when you get healthy towards the end of the season and help you be able to make that playoff push that you think you can make, but injuries are in the way. But also it adds more importance beyond just monetary or sponsorship showmanship, essentially, like basically showing this nice little toy to sponsors. You're just saying, hey, this stuff actually means something in the NBA regular season. And in the process, if you have that point system, you're adding more entry to your division games, your conference games, hoping to maybe spark some like real rivalries instead of trying to manufacture these rivalries and such. And also too, I think one thing, just from remembering back with the in-season tournament, the Vegas games lacked any sort of like big game feel, because at the end of the day, these Vegas, like, fans can't travel on last minute flights to Vegas that quickly. And Vegas fans would care more about a Vegas team, you know? So why not reward the teams with the highest point differential, home court advantage, and these cup wins to actually make it feel like a playoff game, make it feel like a big game. So that's kind of the full gist of what I wrote today over at Substack Elitis.
Yeah,
let's make the regular season matter.
Yes, I'm in agreement. I think it would be something to try, because I do think that the NBA has an all-star and regular season problem right now. It's just a lot of people argue there are too many games. I am one of those people. I'm not saying strip it down to like 60 games or anything like that, but I do think maybe knock it down to 72 games. That could certainly help. And a point system is an interesting idea. I wouldn't hate if the NBA gave it a shot, because it would just make some random Tuesday night game, if you happen to be playing a division rival, that much more important. Like, you talked about it in here, but imagine Dillon Brooks coming into Memphis and the winner of that game gets 4 points. Oh my God, it would be like a blood feud out there on the court. I would absolutely love to see it. But I'm going to go ahead and move to the Memphis Grizzlies and talk about them with you, Parker. Heading into the All-Star break, they have the second best record in franchise history going into the All-Star break. And today on ESPN, Perk said that he thinks that they are still about 2 years away from being called legit title contenders. He sold the Memphis Grizzlies this season. Do you agree with Perk or disagree?
I mean, I disagree, but I understand where he's coming from, because at the end of the day, the Grizzlies, their trade deadline moves, it was flexibility. It was their belief in the young guys. They traded away a battle-tested veteran, Marcus Smart, for expiring contracts that are unlikely to really crack the rotation, and 2 second-round picks. I get it. But also, too, at the same time, I want to say Brian Windhorst and Stephen A. Smith kind of counter, which, granted, I think Stephen A. kind of repeated essentially what Windhorst said, but, you know, they have an elite defense. They have an elite offense. They have a shot, but they're also relying on a lot of young guys to really help them in a playoff schedule, you know, helping them not just in, because for the Grizzlies, they don't want to win just one series. They want to get to the Western Conference Finals. They want to make it to the finals. They want to win a championship. They're relying on youth in that around the big three. And I think the one thing I do agree with, I can't remember who said it between Perk and Windhorst, but, like, you know, one of them said that Desmond Bane has played his best basketball this year, which, if you look at the counting stats, yeah, that's true. But also at the same time, Desmond Bane has averaged like 20 points, 6.5 assists, 5.5 rebounds on 50-40-90 shooting over the past 2 months. He's been ridiculously good. It makes all those early season conversations look completely idiotic.
Yes.
But like, John Morant has not played his best basketball this season. And I guess that's almost the silver lining in the Grizzlies' contention hopes, where it's like, hey, the Grizzlies are already second in the West. They're 36-18, and John Morant's not even at his best basketball right now. Like, could you imagine once he gets going, really going into being that all-NBA point guard that we're used to seeing, like, the Grizzlies could find another year with that. You know, I said the same thing, too, a couple months ago by Desmond Bane. It's like, yeah, there's no better trade deadline acquisition than just getting a healthy Desmond Bane. And lo and behold, Desmond Bane's back to being awesome. So, like, I get – it's one of those things, like, I personally think, I don't know if the Grizzlies are, like, in the same echelon of contenders as Cleveland, Boston, OKC, because I think those teams are just operating at an entirely different level. But I do think that they are a team that should be at the top of conversations of, okay, who has a shot of getting to the conference finals and can legit make a run to the NBA Finals? Because I think that the Grizzlies are that kind of team, especially if, and honestly, it all boils down to matchups, which I'm sure we may talk about, but I think if the Grizzlies get the right matchups and they kind of find a groove and find what works against these playoff teams, especially with an offense that nobody knows will work in a playoff context, like, I think the Grizzlies can make the Western Conference Finals, but that's just me.
Yeah, that's actually kind of where I'm at, and that's why I tend to agree with you. I understand why Perk is saying he's selling the Grizzlies this season and he doesn't think that they are quote-unquote true contender, because I think that he is talking about them in the sense of actually winning the NBA title. But when you look at the Western Conference, I do think that the Grizzlies have a good chance to make it to the Western Conference Finals. There are just some concerns about this team that cannot be overlooked. One of them has been John Morant's consistency this season, whether it's with health and with his gameplay. I believe in John Morant. I think he can bounce back. But what he has to do is be on the court. The Grizzlies are not going to be able to make it to the Western Conference Finals unless John Morant plays consistent basketball. I think that some of the offensive issues we've seen from him of late are tied to his inconsistent play. It is hard to get into a groove with the new offense, with some new players, especially with guys that are coming back like G.G. Jackson, Vince Williams Jr., a healthy Desmond Bain. It's hard to get in a groove with those guys when you aren't able to play five games in a row the entire season. That has to change. That is going to be very important. I think that Ja also adding a mid-range game to the rest of the season may be very helpful for him. I think it could open up some things on the offensive end. But then when you look at it, too, the Grizzlies right now score 123.3 points per game. That is excellent, but a lot of that comes off of the pace that they play. That pace may not be sustainable in the playoffs. They're going to have to do a lot more half-court offense things, which is one of the reasons they have implemented this new offense. And they're kind of in somewhere in between doing a lot of pick-and-roll and the free-flowing offense. I think if you can find a happy medium between the two, that could be successful in the playoffs. But we have yet to see, again, consistency there. There are just a few things they need to tighten up in the back half of the season heading into the playoffs. I think that they have a chance to make the Western Conference Finals. Do I think they can make the NBA Finals and win the NBA Finals this year? I'm not sure, because if we're being quite honest, you have the Oklahoma City Thunder standing in front of you, and they are clicking on all cylinders. They're going to have Chet Holmgren back, and I'm just not sure anybody in the West can really beat them. If there's any team I had to pick in the Western Conference right now that might be able to take them down, I think it's weirdly the Denver Nuggets, but that's just because they have the best player on the planet, and the Jokic factor can completely swing a series. But in the Western Conference, I do think the Grizzlies have a chance to make it to the Western Conference Finals. I'm in full agreement with you.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, again, they're relying on a lot of the youth, but I'm a believer in them and the fact that it's like, hey, they have optionality, you know? If Jalen Wells isn't, like, if Jalen Wells is struggling in a specific matchup, you have Vince Williams, which, like, obviously he has to stay healthy. He has health concerns of his own, but they have Vince Williams. Or if you're not getting that offensive spark from G.G. Jackson, you have Luke Kennard as well. And if this is just a too fast of a matchup for Edie, where his head's kind of spinning, like, Santi Aldama and Brandon Clark have been really good this year and have been guys that I'm comfortable with those guys playing 25 minutes a night in a playoff series and closing with Jaren Jackson Jr. if needed. And I think that's one thing that people kind of slept on. It's like, everyone's like, oh, the Grizzlies should have gotten a veteran big this year with Edie, where it's like, okay, but if you got a veteran big this year, you're either saying, hey, this is essentially a redshirt year for Zach Edey, and I think the ninth pick is way too high to have any sort of redshirt year, unless it's health situations. But also, too, it involves either a DMPCD for Brandon Clark, DMPCD for Santi Aldama, or you're using valuable resources in a big man who's not in your everyday rotation. So I think that's important. But, I'm just confident because they have options. I know people crack a lot about the team, the Grizzlies' depth, and saying, oh, Taylor Jenkins, he has to play his 10 or 11. But it's also like, hey, in a playoff series, having 10 or 11 will allow you to get a feel for matchups, have a feel for who has it in the series, who's really benefiting from the other team's matchups. And from there, you can shrink it down. I believe in Taylor Jenkins to do that because I've seen him do it in 2022, 2023. He'll get a feel of the series and then trim the rotation to what it needs to be in that specific series. I think that's very important for the Memphis Grizzlies if they want to advance further into the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, it does feel like it's going to be a big playoffs for Taylor Jenkins. I think that he is a really good NBA coach, but it does feel like if he doesn't reach a certain expectation, there may need to be conversations had this offseason. I really hope that doesn't happen. But for me, it's like you have to at least make it to the second round. You've got to at least get a playoff series win under your belt this season, especially with the talent that you have and the seemingly, you know, hopeful health that you have heading into it. I will say one thing I do want to see from the Grizzlies post All-Star break is less, I don't know if experimentation is the right word, but in the fourth quarter, just play your damn guys. I don't need to see Scottie Pippen Jr. out there with 7 minutes left in a basketball game. I don't need to see stretches where Jaren Jackson Jr. and John Morant aren't on the floor when both are available with under 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. You can steal those minutes in the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter. You don't need to be doing that in the fourth. That's an adjustment I hope we see moving forward. Now, that being said, all season they've been saying just wait until January, February, All-Star break. That's when you're really going to see the minutes go up. That's when you're going to see the rotation tighten. And to be honest, that has happened. We have seen a steady increase in minutes. We have seen a steady decrease in the rotation and how many guys are getting into the game. I mean, just go look at how many DMPs guys like Jay Huff have been getting in recent weeks. It does seem like when he's got his guys back, he is playing the better players. It's just in those fourth quarters. I mean, just the other night against the Suns, you saw it. Why in the hell did you have that odd lineup in there? That just doesn't need to happen. I think that puts the team in a tough position, and that's why I think some people have some hesitations about Taylor Jenkins heading into the playoffs, because I agree with you. He likes to feel things out and then make his rotation adjustments. To be quite honest, though, you probably need to make those rotation adjustments before a game. I don't want to sacrifice a game or sacrifice a quarter or two to make those decisions. So hopefully we can do a little bit more planning ahead than in the moment for those types of situations. Before I let you go, though, you touched on it briefly there in your last answer. I do want to ask you, do you expect Vince Williams Jr. to become a starter heading into the playoffs over a guy like Jalen Wells just because, you know, he can offer you that defense, but he might be able to give you some more consistent play and playmaking and rebounding and things like that?
I'm going to hold on that. I'm going to say, I think Jalen Wells has done, like, no pun intended, he's done well as a starter. And the Grizzlies starting lineup this year has been very good. Like, by the numbers, they are one of the most dominant starting lineups in the league. I don't think you break that. And it's one of those things, again, it might dictate, like, okay, with this series, Jalen Wells doesn't have it, then Vince Williams may need to start. But I think the biggest thing, too, is just the closing element of it. At the end of the day, I said it on the show with Gabe. At the end of the day, is Vince Williams a guy that's going to be playing 25 minutes tonight and he's going to be down guarding the opposing team's best player in those critical moments late in games? That, to me, is more important than starting. Obviously, you don't want to, like, handicap yourself. And I think that's kind of where the answer of, like, oh, if Jalen Wells is struggling. But I think of right now, as of today, I would still have Jalen Wells starting. So I think he has been good. He has been good in this job of slowing down the opposing team's best guy. I think there are some matchups where he could struggle, whether it's twitchier, like the twitchier shooting guards that are athletic and run off a lot of screens, like your Jalen Greens, or your physical guys, kind of like LeBron James and Luka. But it's like with those guys, it's like, or in, especially with Jalen Wells in those instances, like he needs an NBA weight room summer. Like that, I think that kind of changes things right there, because I think he has great size, he has good functional strength as well, but he still needs to add a little bit more muscle to really expand upon his defensive versatility. But I do think that there's just some elements that Vince Williams Jr. adds that Jalen Wells doesn't, and that's really the extra playmaking, the rebounding, the defensive events, but also just, I don't know, kind of just being a basketball psycho.
A demon.
That's a big part. Yeah, and like I'm not going to say that as a spiritual man. I'm not going to say that, but that's a good summation of what Vince Williams Jr. brings to the game of basketball. And like in the playoffs, you need that. Like, you need that, oh, shoot, Vince, like, the game has to stop because Vince Williams is chirping with Anthony Edwards, and now the crowd's going wild, and you find some momentum. That's the kind of stuff that Vince Williams Jr. brings from the tangible standpoint. That's just not Jalen Wells' personality. That's totally fine. I like this little, like, silent killer mode that he's on, where mm-hmm. he's just going to go about his business, and his primary focus is, I'm going to make sure that this dude's not dropping 40 tonight. And to his credit, he's done well in that job.
Yeah, he absolutely has. And I'm in agreement with you. I just think that Vince can offer you just a little bit more than Jalen Wells can. And I do think some of it is the psychological edge that Vince has. I mean, we have photos of him smiling while defending Steph Curry. You need that bit of dog. You know, Tony Allen just this week was talking about Vince Williams Jr. could fill the role that he filled for the Memphis Grizzlies back in the G&G day. He's the guy primed to be able to do that. Are we expecting first team all defense from Vince Williams? No, that's not fair. You know, Tony's one of the best defenders we've ever seen on the perimeter in the NBA, but he can offer you something close to that. And I think that's what the Grizzlies are probably going to need in the NBA playoffs. It's no disrespect to Jalen Wells, because I agree with you. He's been a great rookie, has a chance to win Rookie of the Year. I think he's locked up first-team All-Rookie at minimum. So I'm excited to see how he grows moving forward. I also think just as his NBA career goes, he'll get a better whistle, too, on the defensive end. Like, he gets called for a lot of tic-tacky fouls because he is a rookie trying to defend some of the best players in the NBA. It happened the other night against the Clippers. Like, he just had a couple ticky-tack fouls because he put, like put his hand on James Harden's hip. And it's like, those won't be happening as he grows older. Final thing I want to leave you with, though. I do have an idea for the NBA All-Star Game, and I just want you to tell me yay or nay. You're a wrestling guy, a wrestling fanatic, I would even say. My idea for the NBA All-Star Game, to help the competitiveness of it, to increase the emotion of this game, is throughout the game, just randomly, like the Royal Rumble, you release basketball lunatics onto the court. Like, Dillon Brooks just comes flying down like the ultimate warrior out of nowhere to defend people. Vince Williams Jr. gets thrown out there. PJ Tucker, just find the most lunatic defenders in the NBA. Lou Dort, throw them out there and just see what happens. Their only goal is to get steals and defend. Like, every single steal that they get like $1,000 or something. Like, make there be an incentive for them to defend their asses off.
Dude, I'm for it. Heck, I even was thinking like a couple months ago, and you know, I still see it with the steal numbers. Like, I'm like, how many points per game does Dyson Daniels have to average to get consideration for All-Star? Because he has just been a menace defensively, putting up like generational numbers, steal numbers, and being like the legit best perimeter defender in the league. Like, okay, at some point we got to start rewarding these defensive guys and getting them into the All-Star game. Like, could you imagine, or even then, like let's say in like, all right, after the first quarter or whatever, but okay, we're going to bring out these five defenders, and it's like Alex Caruso, Dyson Daniels, Dillon Brooks, trying to think of more, Tumani Kamara from Portland, and then I'm trying to think of one last just like pure defensive, Zubac. Like, could you imagine? Just like, hey, try to score on these guys. They're going to go all out because every stop they get, they're going to get $1,000.
I'm so here for it. It needs to happen. I'll send the tape to Adam Silver. How about that? We'll see what he has to say.
Let's do it.
All right, Parker. Thank you so much, my friend. Have a great weekend. Happy Valentine's to you and Allie.
I appreciate that big time, Connor. Thanks for having me. Enjoy your weekend. We'll be back next week.
Yes, sir. That was Parker Fleming. You can find him on Twitter at @Paka_Flock, and make sure you are subscribed to Substack Elitist. All proceeds support St. Jude through Allie's Allies. You can all, you know, it is the best Grizzlies and NBA free Substack out there. When we come back on the Gabe Kuhn Show, we got to get into the Blitz. You're listening to Connor Dunning on 929 FM ESPN. Stick around. Welcome back into the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he is out. Every single day on the show, we do something called the Blitz, and we're going to do it again right now. George, hit it.
Now, the biggest stories. Overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
And as always, the Blitz is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. George, what you got for me?
Daniel Gafford is out at least 6 weeks with an MCL sprain. Between losing him and Anthony Davis in recent weeks, how far might the Mavs fall in the standings without literally any of their bigs?
Any of their bigs. So not only are they missing Daniel Gafford and Anthony Davis, but PJ Washington is also out. Dwight Powell is out. They traded away Maxi Kleba. The Dallas Mavericks have a lot of issues right now. And Gabe and I talked about it just the other day. I think the Mavericks angered the basketball gods, and they are going to have to pay for their sins, because what they did to the fan base of the Dallas Mavericks, what they did to the Mavericks franchise overall, what they did to Luka Doncic is just not okay, and this is the price that they're having to pay. It's going to be really interesting this offseason to see what the remaining players on this team decide. Is Kyrie going to want out? Is he going to want to deal with this mess? Because the entire idea of the Luka trade was you were going to bring somebody in that could play defense and was going to be healthy and was in shape. So the player that they chose to bring in to do that was Anthony Davis, whose nickname is quite literally Street Clothes in the NBA. People call this man Street Clothes. Has Anthony Davis been healthier in recent years? Yes. What do I mean by recent years? I mean last year.
Last season.
For one single season, Anthony Davis was pretty healthy. I told this story before, but this past weekend, when Anthony Davis was going absolutely ballistic in the first half for the Dallas Mavericks, I knew things were too good to be true. I texted not only my father, but also my group chat of friends, and I said, listen, this Anthony Davis thing is super fun. I am happy for him. I am happy for Mavericks fans right now in this first half, but this is not sustainable. Some part of Anthony Davis's body is going to explode within the next 2 weeks. And then what happened? It exploded within the next two quarters. It was a non-contact injury. He is going to be out for a while now. It sounds like they are deciding not to do season-ending surgery, which is good news for the Dallas Mavericks. But by the time Anthony Davis comes back, by the time all these injuries are better for the Dallas Mavericks, is it going to be a little bit too little, too late? Because right now, when you look at the Western Conference standings in the NBA, the Dallas Mavericks sit at 30-26, 15 games back of the one seed, but only 1.5 games ahead of the 9-10 seeds, who are the Sacramento Kings, who are 5-5 in their last 10, and the Golden State Warriors, who are 6-4 in their last 10. But the Golden State Warriors have added somebody named Jimmy Butler to their roster, so I have to expect that they're going to be able to catch up. And then, right outside of the playoffs right now, you do have the Phoenix Suns sitting at 26-28, and the Spurs at 23-29. It's going to be interesting to see if one of those two teams can make a late season run and make it into the play-in after the All-Star break. I do think it is scary hours right now for the Dallas Mavericks, though. How far can Kyrie Irving get you? Because that is basically what they're relying on right now. Max Christie is going to be able to give you some good minutes, especially with increased minutes.
He's a good player.
He's a good player. He was solid for the Lakers. He's been really good for the Dallas Mavericks in the first few games he's played for them. But he's not a second guy by any means. Klay Thompson's been okay this season. He hasn't been the Klay Thompson of old. I think the main issue for the Dallas Mavericks, it's not necessarily the offense. I think that when you have Kyrie, you can kind of figure out your offense. They'll be, you know, they'll be fine on that end. It's their defense. They really have no defenders right now. Their best defensive players are all injured. And I'm just going to be really interested to see that even when these big guys come back, how is it going to look on the offensive end when they relied on so many lobs? They're going to be able to shoot the basketball. We know that because they've got Kyrie, they've got Klay Thompson, they've got Max Christie. You've got plus three-point shooters. They're going to be able to shoot. But what's going to happen on the inside without Anthony Davis? People are going to pack the paint. They're going to be able to go out to shooters. They've only got one creator right now in Kyrie Irving. Klay Thompson can't create anymore at his age and after all the injuries that he has had. I don't know what they're going to do. I really don't. They are in a really tough position right now because Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, he's not a terrible player, but by no means do you want him to be one of your main pieces. Dante Exum, he's had a resurgence kind of this season with the Dallas Mavericks, but again, he's a bench guy. He's a rotation guy. He in no way needs to be a focal point of your team. Najee Marshall, I'm still a huge fan of that pickup for them. He's been good, but again, you don't need him to be one of your most important players. They're going to need guys like PJ Washington to step up in a huge way. They're going to need Derek Lively to step up in a big way and not just rely on those rebounds and not just rely on those lobs to get his points. It's just, I have no idea how the Dallas Mavericks are going to do this moving forward, and they absolutely pissed off the basketball gods. And to be quite honest, this is what they deserve. I feel really bad for Mavericks fans specifically. I feel bad for people within the organization that didn't have anything to do with this because this is very clearly an owner Nico decision that they should not have made. It's absolutely ridiculous that they've tried to slander Luka Doncic when they were sending him out the door. They took $116 million out of his pocket and then called him fat and lazy. You do not do that to one of the best three players in the NBA who's 25 years old.
Make that argument.
You sold a decade of play for $116 million. You're going to have to pay Luka a supermax contract, and you didn't want to do it. It is new owner syndrome. He came in. He thought he knew more than everybody else in the NBA. We see it constantly. Go look at the new owners in the NBA the last few seasons. Look at the Phoenix Suns, what happened to them. They made it to the NBA Finals. He came in and he said, no, we're trading for Kevin Durant. We're trading for these guys. We're trading for Bradley Beal. And guess what? We just went through it. They're not in the playoffs right now. They traded away all of that youth. They traded away all of their future for a shot at winning right now because, oh, big names win every single time. No, they don't. It boggles my mind that the owner came out and said, we wanted to bring in somebody that was going to be healthy and was going to work hard and isn't lazy, and then he cited Shaquille O'Neal. It makes absolutely no sense to me. We are almost, you know, we are 2 weeks removed from the Luka trade, yep. And it is still just as shocking today as it was the moment it happened.
It's actually, like, the level, I don't want to say of stupid, because...
It is stupid.
No, at the end of the day, it is dumb. It is a dumb trade.
Dumb.
And there have been the amount of story around it where we heard that Rob Pelinka somehow talked him into taking less than what Nico wanted to begin with.
He whittled him down. How?
My brother in Christ, you decided not to take this to market and instead let Rob Pelinka, you know, just talk you into, like, here, I will give you, you know, one Magic Bean and Anthony Davis on one leg for one of the youngest superstars in the NBA.
I think that's what's so surprising about it, too, is they were talking about this health of Anthony Davis. He was injured. He was injured when he got traded. He wasn't healthy when he got traded. He had just gotten injured.
Yes.
He was not playing. Was Luka injured? Yes.
They both were. AD missed the game right before, 2 days earlier against the Knicks. He did not play.
He was being interviewed in street clothes, which is, again, his nickname. And what is so crazy about this trade is Anthony Davis is one of the best 75 players we've ever seen in the NBA. He is an all-time great.
Fantastic.
He's an NBA champion.
Love AD.
One of the best big men ever. And we are talking about him as if he is John Conchar. Basically, we are acting as if he is John Conchar because of this trade. But it's just because it makes absolutely no sense. It is the dumbest trade in NBA history.
It's awful.
It is the most shocking trade in NBA history. I'm not sure it's the most one-sided trade, because that is going to be the Paul George Oklahoma City Thunder trade. I think that is the most one-sided one. And you brought it up there for just a moment. It's a story that went a bit under-discussed when it came out earlier this week. But it has come out that it sounds like Nico at least called two other teams. It sounds like he called the Bucks, and it sounds like he at least ran it by him. I don't know if he was like, hey, this is serious. But it at least sounds like he may have run it by the Bucks and run it by the Timberwolves. Now, the Bucks said no because it was Giannis.
Well, of course it was going to be. Yes, of course.
Even with the mystery of Giannis and his future with Milwaukee, I understand why they would say no to Luka. Here's what I'm going to say about the Timberwolves.
Who was the offer?
Ant.
Of course.
Stupid. You take Luka. I love Ant. He's an exciting player. Had an amazing dunk last night on Chet. Shout out to Ant.
Potential face of the league.
But if you are asking me who I'd rather have for the next 10 years, Anthony Edwards or Luka Doncic, it's not even close.
They're about the same age, too, aren't they?
So Luka's 25. I think Ant is 23.
I was going to say, please check me on that, because I want to say they're similar in age. I mean, a lot closer than Anthony Davis.
Ant is 23.
Is 23, so there's a two-year difference there. The kicker is that Anthony Davis is 31. He got traded for someone 6 years older than him who has similar injury concerns and health concerns and also has recently brought their team to a finals. I guess that's, you know,
that's
part of
another
where the,
thing is
the similarity ends.
This guy dragged your team to the finals last year with his knees were quite literally bleeding. He fought through injury. He showed up to you. Is he maybe a little bit overweight? Sure. You know, the whole drinking problem thing is ridiculous. I don't buy that whatsoever. I'd never really heard that until now. All of a sudden, Luka has a drinking problem. Really? He's got it. And you know, I actually agree.
That's legit slander.
I think that Nick Wright had a great point when he talked about it this week.
Shocking.
He was like, let's say that all of these things about Luka are true. It just means he's going to get better.
You're telling me
that Luka is averaging 28-8-8 with a drinking problem while being fat and lazy? And now he's playing with LeBron in L.A.?
Who's just going to put him through the super soldier program?
Exactly.
And
he's going to throw him in a cryogenic chamber, and all of a sudden Luka's going to look like a superhero. What are y'all doing? So you're telling me Luka was one of the best players we've ever seen in the NBA while fat, lazy, and with a drinking problem?
Yeah.
And you traded that guy away because you don't think he's going to get better? You don't think his work ethic's going to get better?
You know who I feel really
Insane.
Bad for? Jason Kidd.
So I felt bad for Jason Kidd at first.
That press conference was...
I do think he wanted to commit violence. I don't know if he's...
He wanted to put hands on
Nico. I don't know if
he's
an innocent bystander here, though.
Really?
I'm not sure if he's an innocent bystander, because we also must remember that Jason Kidd does have a history of being a bit of a snake. A bit of a snake.
Oh, okay.
Jason Kidd. Look at his Bucks regime when he was there coaching them.
True.
The whole Nets fiasco and how he left the Brooklyn Nets. I'm not 100% sure Jason Kidd is innocent in this. I think Jason Kidd is just very smart and understands that Nico looks like the dumbest person on the planet, so he's allowing him to look like the dumbest person on the planet, and he's saying, I'm going to use Nico as a body shield right now.
But at the same time, he's still producing. You know what I mean? It'd be different if Luka potentially had some of these issues and wasn't producing on the court.
That's what I mean.
He still is. Why would Jason Kidd be like, the best player on my team? Bye.
I don't think he said. I don't think he
was
like
best. I don't think he signed off on it. I'll say that.
I think that he was probably told, hey, we're going to trade Luka for AD. And because Jason Kidd does talk about defense a lot.
That's true.
I do think he probably was able to give at least a yellow light on it. Maybe not a full green.
Yeah.
But I think Jason Kidd was like, if you do this, I think we can make it work. And then Anthony Davis, his body exploded. And then Daniel Gafford's knee exploded. And now they're looking at a chance to not make the playoffs.
Yeah.
If they don't make the playoffs, Nico's going to have to go into witness protection. The ending of Goodfellas is going to be the ending of Nico's regime in Dallas. He's going to be looking into the sky. Helicopters are going to be following him. It's going to get bad for Nico. It's going to get bad.
Yeah, that's not great for him. The ESPN2 broadcast last night put up a graphic showing their All-Penny Hardaway team. Who makes your All-Penny starting five and sixth man?
We both put one together here. We put one together. I think we might have the exact same one.
It very well could be.
We discussed it briefly. We didn't want to spoil each other's lists, but you know, it's been a topic of discussion on the station all day. I will say, in the graphic, I did notice a few things. One, Alex Lomax.
I was very close to putting him on there.
I have no
loyalty pick.
Huge issue with him being there. It's just not correct. Like, if you're picking the best five that Penny has had,
yes,
you're not picking Alex.
That's
Lomax.
Why I asked
but
when we were talking about this.
I very much
loyalty pick.
I have always appreciated Alex Lomax. I was a huge supporter of his. He won them a lot of basketball games. He helped win them that Tennessee game. I got a lot of love for Alex Lomax. Another thing I noticed, they spelled Kendrick Davis's name wrong. High disrespect there. You better put some respect on Kendrick Davis's name. Shame on you, ESPN. And then there was another pick on there that didn't make my list, but I love that they had him on there. Jeremiah Martin.
Jeremiah Martin is
one of the under-discussed heroes of the Penny Hardaway era. He was so much fun to watch. Those teams didn't have too much success, but he was unreal. Had a couple massive, massive games. He deserves mention in this discussion. Is he going to make my team? No. Could he have been a sixth man? Maybe. I would say he's probably like my seventh guy.
Seven, eight guy.
When I run through this. But what we did, we're going to do it. We did a starting five, and then we did a sixth man. I'm just going to go through mine, and if there's any that you don't have, just say it, and that's where you can jump in. All right,
okay,
George?
I got you.
So point guard, it's got to be for me. It's got to be Kendrick Davis. Got to be Kendrick Davis at the one. I understand some people might be saying P.J. Haggerty. Well, guess what? He's my two. P.J. Haggerty's at my two. I think that the two of them I think Kendrick can run an offense a little bit more. P.J.
No problem here.
Is going to be more in the scoring position here. Hey, P.J., go fill it up.
No issues.
Go fill it up.
Love it.
Yeah, P.J. Haggerty, he's going to be my two. Three, give me DeAndre Williams.
Bing.
Give me DeAndre Williams. You get the defense. You get the offense. You get the leadership. You get the dog. You have to have DeAndre Williams
have
in
to.
Your top five, without
have
a doubt.
To.
Four, Precious Achiuwa. Precious Achiuwa, Conference Player of the Year. That team didn't have a lot of success, but holy crap, was Precious Achiuwa so much fun to watch. Absolutely loved him on the Memphis Tigers. Has had a lot of success in the NBA. Huge Precious fan. He's one of those guys that I wish was a Memphis Grizzly. He's fit in perfect on the New York Knicks. He's a fan favorite. I love Precious so much. You love Precious, too.
We love Precious. It's great.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
My number five, Jalen Duren. Jalen Duren's my five. Everybody knows how I feel about Jalen Duren. I've been a huge fan of his since the moment he stepped in Memphis. I've been wanting him on the Memphis Grizzlies for a very long time. During the offseason, I was like, we've got to find a way to trade for Jalen Duren. It would be unbelievable. But no, Jalen Duren, I will never forget watching him in that Gonzaga game. He put his shoulder into Chet, and I've described it like this before. If you've seen Doctor Strange, when he gets punched and his soul leaves his body and he's just watching his body and he's like, what the hell just happened? That happened to Chet. The moment Duren's shoulder hit his chest. It almost killed him. I think that it almost killed him. So Jalen Duren's got to be my five. And then at my six, this is where I could put Jeremiah Martin. And if somebody wanted to put Jeremiah Martin here, I wouldn't blame you at all. But I do think that you need a little bit more defense coming off the bench, not just scoring. I'm putting Lester Quinones here. I love Lester. I was a huge fan of his while he was in college. I thought he was a professional for the Memphis Tigers team. I'm glad that he has had success in the pros and he's been able to make himself a bit of a career. I thought he was a perfect 3-and-D guy. Lester is my sixth man.
I have the exact same list.
No notes.
No notes. Perfection. The only thing I had, which this could have just been the way I was, you know, the order I was looking at them. I just had PJ at the one and Kendrick at the two, but I think that's kind of either way. They can, I mean, positionless basketball.
No problem with that whatsoever.
None. Zero. I love it. Love the list. Lomax was one I was genuinely looking at just because, I mean, that's a guy who was there for the entirety of his career, stayed at Memphis, a true loyalty pick. One of those guys where I'm like, this is like your glue. This is your leadership. You know, this is someone that you want to have in your locker room on a day-to-day basis, you know, putting in work with practice as well as, you know, making sure that everybody is in the right mindset, you know, on game day.
If we were doing an all-heart team, Alex Lomax would absolutely be on it. I just think talent-wise, I've got to put these guys over him.
Of course.
He can be in my bench rotation, though. I think Josh Minot might sneak into that bench rotation. Like I said, Jeremiah Martin's going to be in that bench rotation. David Jones is certainly going to be in that bench rotation.
Yep.
I think he could also be considered a sixth man coming off the bench. He could fill it up, too.
I was looking
at him David Jones' only job is to score buckets, David Jones is going to get you some buckets. But the problem is I do need him to play some defense and not turn the ball over, which, you know, it's, hey, all love to David Jones, but we know he's got a little bit of an issue with that. I do think, though, if you gave me Kendrick, PJ, DeAndre, Precious, Jalen, and Lester, I'm going to win a lot of basketball games.
Oh,
a lot of basketball games.
Oh, yes.
All right. That's going to be it for the Blitz today. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the show with the Rewind. You're listening to Connor Dunning on 99 FM ESPN.